Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Undoubtedly, President Donald Trump has had a huge impact on the comedy world. Some are touting this as a golden age for satire and political comedy, but for others like comedian Hari Kondabolu, the Trump bump has just made their brand of humor a little more relatable.
Kondabolu is a stand-up comedian known in part for his social commentary and his work on the FX program Totally Biased with W. Kamal Bell. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about what it's like being a political comedian in the age of Trump.
I mean, strangely, for me, it's helpful because a lot of the topics I talk about are kind of these evergreen things, right? Things like, racism or sexism or war, immigration, all these like, I like big topics. I like to explore these things that are hard to break into. And I think for some people, at least before, it was very difficult to follow, or maybe they felt like, oh, this isn't for me. And, I would explain it and stuff, but I feel like sometimes it's useful if you have some base level understanding of what's happening in the world, right? And now it's a much easier thing to do because it's like Trump said this about immigration. I'm talking about immigration. Trump said this about race. I'm talking about race. Like, he sadly creates a very easy segue into very difficult material. I mean, I wish it wasn't the case, obviously, but unfortunately it does kind of make it a little easier because, all these things, like it's one thing when you say the sky is falling and no one's looking up and paying attention, and then the sky falls and then they want to know why it fell. And that's where I'm at right now. The sky fell, and so I can now explain why it fell.
So when you're talking to audiences now, it seems like everyone's looking up.
Yeah, I mean, they know what's happening. They know that something is terribly wrong. They want to know how this happened. They want to know, what conditions are set in the nation. People, I mean, like, it's interesting. Like, I see more white people who are passionate and want to change what this country is and are actually critically questioning privilege and race than I ever have before. And some of that has to do, I think, with the natural like evolution of thinking and people being exposed to ideas at a younger age. But I think it's also they're horrified. Like, how did this happen? Like, how are we at this point, especially after 8 years of, it wasn't a perfect presidency, but certainly looking at it now, it's like there was some progress, especially socially. And in terms of other stuff, we at least held where it was. And now everything is falling apart, being undone, and people want to know why. And I think the race stuff, especially after what happened in Charlottesville, like, is scary. People didn't know this is where we were. And we've always been here, but now you see who gets empowered.
When it became clear a while back that Trump was, a real contender for the office of the presidency, there were a lot of people saying, well, this will be great for comedians. This guy is an endless source of material. And it seems like from what you're saying, for you, he has been in some ways. But what do you think of him as a source of material?
Well, I don't think he's been an endless source of material. I mean, it's basically stuff that I'm writing, which has nothing to do with him, comes off as more relevant, even though it was relevant before. It's not like racism all of a sudden is relevant. Like, it's always been relevant, but now people are paying attention. I don't think he's an endless source of material because it's almost like reading what happened is the material, like is the joke. I should say, like, CNN has become Comedy Central. Like, it's so absurd. It almost feels like The Onion now is breaking news. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so absurd. And so, like, I don't think he's necessarily a great source of material just because it's every day and it's constant and you can barely digest it before the next thing shows up. So, I don't necessarily think this is good for comedy. I don't think this is good for anybody. This is just sad.
Mm. That's actually, I was reading a recent interview you had with Vice, and one of the comments you made really stuck out to me. I never thought being told I was necessary and important would depress me. Is that how you feel?
That's how I'm feeling, yeah. I mean, like, it's a good feeling to know that I can contribute positively. And that especially now, maybe some of the things I'm saying has a little bit more impact and, like I said before, more relevance to people, even though they should have had relevance before. But it also means that something must have happened And something is happening currently in the country that has scared people into finding some catharsis with me. I mean, you know, I kind of wish this is the way people felt before Trump got elected. I kind of wish they had this urgency when there was something we could have done before. But at the same time, like, you know, struggle is long. You know, struggle is always long. Change doesn't happen overnight. There's a lot of forces that prevent you from creating a just society. And hopefully maybe this will, you know, if there's any positive spin, this has ignited something that hopefully will last well after Trump.
Now you're coming back to Milwaukee. Milwaukee is, of course, in Wisconsin, which did go for Trump. Does it feel like you're coming back to a different place in some ways?
No, because it's Milwaukee. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like because Wisconsin went one way, Milwaukee also feels the same. You know, Milwaukee, I've always found a really interesting city. It's a very complicated city. It's a very diverse and segregated city in some ways, right? So I find it interesting. I find it really curious to, you know, to see how people in Milwaukee are feeling. But I don't think that just because Trump won, Milwaukee is a different place. You know, I think Milwaukee has always been a really interesting city and a really complicated city. And I don't think that's going to change overnight.
No, and I don't think it has changed overnight. But when you're coming into different states, when you're coming into different cities where you are getting audiences who might be more conservative, do you find yourself ever changing your material, not telling jokes that you might otherwise?
Sometimes. I think one thing I do is I try to, if I have to explain things out a little bit more to make sure we're on the same page, I'll do that. Interact with the audience. I'll try to be more present. I'll try to make sure they know that, like, I'm with you. This isn't rote memorization. I'll improvise a little bit. Sometimes I'll throw some jokes in that I didn't plan to do to kind of soften the ground a little bit, you know? But at a certain point, my point of view is not going to change. Like, I'm not flexible in that regard. As a performer, I'm flexible. Like, I'll feel out where I have to be. But as a writer and as a thinker, that's not, you know, the flexibility doesn't happen on stage. Like, I know who I am, you know, and if something's going to change in me, it's not going to happen on stage. You know, I think I try to bring a degree of integrity. Like, I want you to understand, and I want you to laugh, but I want you to know who I am and what I stand for.
Well, that's something kind of that your mom brought up, apparently, to you. She asked you to tone it down, which you said was something that she hasn't said to you in a while. But it seems like you're not going to.
Yeah, I think she felt that way not because of anything artistic. You know, I think she felt that way because she sees what the country is and she's afraid. I think my mother and both my parents and just me to some degree, and we're a little worried. This, you know, it's not to say the country changed overnight. We're just, you know, we're actually seeing what it is. But it also means that certain people are empowered, you know, as we saw in Charlottesville. And I worry about, you know, what that means for free speech, and especially for people who do not have the opinion of white supremacists, what that means, you know, when they speak up. What does suppression look like? So I worry about that. You know, that's a thing that I rightfully worry about. And so do my parents. They worry about my safety. But at the end of the day, like, you know, the one thing that was said a lot after 9/11 is we can't change our way of living because then the terrorists win. They kept saying in the terrorists win. I'm not really sure what that means exactly, but I do know that if we're going to use that same statement now, like, I'm not going to let these terrorists win. I'm not going to let them control how I do what I do, and I'm not going to let them change why I do what I do. So, you know, I think I understand her fears as a mother, and I obviously respect them, but I also know that this is something I have to do. This is my job. This is something I love to do. And if I can't speak now, then what was the point of any of this?
Part of what you do does seem to kind of blur the lines between comedy and activism, but you feel very rooted, it seems, in comedy. To you, what is the definition of both, and do they kind of cross over?
I think activism, you know, there's it's purpose driven, right? And the purpose is whatever issue or social justice or whatever. Activism can be positive, it can be negative. It's you have whatever issue you have, right? and you are trying to push for that issue. And at the end of the day, the result, you know, is the goal is an improvement on that issue or an awareness of that issue. I don't go in with that. You know, any awareness I'm trying to create is for the purpose of a punchline. Am I giving you enough information to laugh at this? You know, I don't expect you to change your mind. I don't expect this to change policy. I'm grateful when I hear that my work is being used, especially by young people and by organizers and by professors and high school teachers, you know, to illustrate various points. But that wasn't the intention. I'm a comedian. I wanna say things that I think are interesting and new and funny and thoughtful and, you know, analyze the world that we're in. You know, at the end of the day, I'm creating art. And I think that when you start to think about art as anything more than art in certain ways, like if you actually think this is going to change the world, I think you're less likely to change the world. I think that you need to be connected to people. I think you need to be connected to your values and your ideas and your truths, and you need to be good at the art form. I know enough people that go on stage and say these things that are in the name of activism as artists, but they don't have the, you know, the skill level to back it up. You know, it's only as effective as you are good. And so at the end of the day, I try to keep it simple. What is my focus? It's to be a great comedian. What do I believe? How do I make some of these ideas funny? I mean, that's the only thing I'm thinking about. The goal with comedy is to make people laugh.
That being said, you have a number of shows coming up. What are you most looking forward to? I mean, besides making people laugh, besides, you know, doing good comedy.
I mean, I think that's the bulk of it. You know, I'm always excited to see, go to different cities and see how that city is feeling, what's happening locally. You know, some places, you know, there'll be some event that happens in town or some, you know, whether it's a shooting, you know, a innocent person being murdered by the police, or whether it's some other kind of social issue. And I happen to stumble in as all that talk is happening. And sometimes I feel like, whoa, like, people are letting out their stress at the show. So, I mean, you never know what you're walking into as a performer. Like when I recorded my first album in Oakland, it was after a bunch of, you know, protests regarding Oscar Grant and, you know, about the police officer who was acquitted. And it was, you know, this is post the Trayvon verdict. And if you listen to that first recording for Waiting for 2042, like, that audience is explosive. Like, and it isn't just me. Like, I'm making people laugh, but it felt like a rally, unintended, not my goal, because people had so much passion and they were so frustrated, and I let them release that at the show. And, you know, I never expected that, but there is some punk element in it. Like, when you're on stage, you don't know what people are feeling in the audience, but there's a lot of energy and they want to release it. And every city and every audience is different. So I'm always curious to see what happens when I get to that city.
Well, Hari Kondabolu, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect. And I'm hoping when you come to the city that everything's perfect and lovely.
I hope so, too, for all our sakes. But thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to Milwaukee.
Hari Kondabolu is a stand-up comedian. He's headed back to Milwaukee on Friday, September 15th. He spoke on the line with Lake Effect's Joy Powers, and you can find more at wuwm.com.